Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Jones Chronicles. I'm your host, Christina. I have been revived from the third circle of hell that I feel like my entire body was in yesterday, because I had the migraine to kill all other migraines. I feel like it started at 4 a.m. and didn't end till about 8:30 p.m.
I'm dying. Help me.
There's some times where I'm just like, am I dead? No, I can't possibly be dead because I'm still feeling this amount of pain, and yet I feel dead. My daughter, of course, took this opportunity to crawl in bed with me and say it was a mistake. I'm like, oh, is that right? I woke up this child, had her head all the way into my shoulder. In my back, her whole entire body just glued to the side of mine while I'm barely holding on to the edge of the mattress. And I'm like, Maya. And she just hissed like a damn cat, like, I'm like, okay, I guess you're not just sure. I guess I'm sleeping with your head in my shoulder. And eventually, at some point in the middle of the night, she decided that this is a queen size bed and there's a shit ton of space over there. But that's how out of it my body was, that it just accepted those terms. And I went back to sleep. But man, that was a rough 24 hours. So now I have a lot of energy. I feel refreshed. I finally tried to get myself to eat something, because when your stomach is rolling and you try to force yourself to eat so that you could take the pills to try to make yourself feel better, but it turns out to be just this horrible cycle. Yeah. Yeah.
They ask you how you are, you just have to say that you're fine when you're not really fine, but you just can't get into it because they would never understand.
On the plus side, definitely helps the weight loss journey that I'm on, because I know I dropped at least 2 pounds. What, Dockery? I watched a really good documentary this week. It was a 3-parter, so 3 hours long, called The Last of the Pygmies, which are a hunter-gatherer tribe that lives in the Congo. We, of course, spent the last third hour being political, which I suppose that's necessary. But at the same time, I enjoy learning more about the tribe and our similarities. It just doesn't matter where you go in society. You're going to find the people. You're just going to find that people are the same wherever you go. And they had this British woman. She spent 6 months with this tribe. I forgot. I think her name was Livia. She had the whitest teeth I've ever seen. And they managed to stay that white despite her being in this hut for 6 months. I'm not sure if she spent the whole 6 months there. I'm pretty skeptical. Her makeup was too on point. You know, her pajamas was too clean. I'm looking around, everyone else is dirty as fuck and she looks pristine. I'm like, I think she spent some time in her little tent in the corner, even though they totally made a bed for her. And she's like, yeah, I'm not taking that. I'm not taking where you need to sleep, because then y'all will be on the floor. It's like a whole shit ton of people in that house. But it was very interesting, the differences in the cultures as far as some things that are rather acceptable, like domestic abuse. Like, a lot of the men are really lazy and smoke ganja all day, and the women are doing the foraging, even though they're supposed to go out and hunt and provide. And you had some of the men who did, but a lot of them didn't, especially the younger generation. They just wanted to eat and fuck. And yeah, it was fascinating. And they are really small. Like, she was 5'6", she said, and she was standing next to them. They all look like they were half her size. So they're like 4'11". And then you get to learn about the socialism. Do you want to say socialism or classism? Classism is the right word. Between the Bantu people who own them, even though I did read the comment section, because anytime there's a lot of interpretation, things could get lost in translation. And there were a couple of people in the comments that did speak the language, like, oh, they definitely utilize certain words. And in the last half, the little political part of it, you can definitely see her leading more of the conversation. And I don't like that particular type of documentary storytelling, because it's about the point you want to make. So you can edit it as you want so that it's more consistent versus just allowing us to see these people in all of their good qualities, their bad qualities. There was a drug deal that went bad. Some dude got smacked up. She got in the middle of it. And I'm like, nah, 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 nah. Something tells me if he ends up dead because of this is because he was fucking up, okay? Clearly, there's an illegal trade going on. And I picked that shit up immediately, because if you've been in the hood, you know.
Making my way through the hood, sipping this yak. Niggas about to get blown with the Mac. Riding around the block with a Glock. Yo ass finna get shot.
And then they had this trial that was clearly staged. And I'm like, man, that dude is definitely dead right now. That was my thought. When the documentary ended, I was like, that dude is definitely dead, like D-E-A-D-D dead, because I don't think they're going to let that shit go. And clearly there are rules here that your cameras, they don't want you to see. And they threw together this this very smoking screen type of trial where he even got into it with his own Bantu people because he knew what was up. Like, I know bullshit when I smell it. So I don't think that that is going to resolve itself the minute them cameras are gone in any type of peaceful manner. But it's on YouTube if you want to go watch it. It's extremely fascinating just to delve into another world. The people really kind and nice and just them. And I love that. I love how they argue too. Some of the best shit you ever seen in your life. It's like, oh my gosh, I wish we did this. And in some neighborhoods, actually, it is like that, where you can't look out of the window and people are definitely resolving their issues. What am I talking about? Like, I don't. It's been a while since I've been privy to any of that where I live, which is a positive. But it has happened before. I forgot that one person that jumped on the back of that dude's car. She's a female. He was driving off and she was on the car. And I was like, oh, okay. And they just continued down the road. I was like, she either going to have to jump off or she going to get hurt.
Linda, listen.
Speaking of people getting hurt, another documentary I watched was this interview. They were interviewing the ex-husband of Sarah Boone, who killed her boyfriend, tried to get her husband, her ex-husband, who was effectively her bitch, to help cover up her crime. But he was smart enough to not go into that house and was like, I will not be privy to this shit. Clearly, privy is the word of the day, because I've used it at least 5 times, I feel like. But she put her boyfriend, Jorge, in a suitcase, taunted him when he was begging her to let him out of the suitcase, that he couldn't breathe, that he was dying. And she's like, well, this is what you fucking deserved. Then went to bed, then got up the next day and was like, I'm so stressed. I need a cigarette. And decided to call her boyfriend to say, look, I killed someone. What do I do? And you need to look at the boyfriend. Like, you could tell that he was in an abusive relationship. It was like, he was the moneymaker. He was taking care of her. Like, she was a certified Karen. And I often wonder who marries these women when I see these Karens out there. And man, The other side of that story is actually pretty sad. And he doesn't want to admit to the fact that he was in an abusive relationship with a woman because he doesn't want to admit that a woman abused him. But it's very clear that she mentally and physically owned this guy, and that her going to jail for murder was the best thing that he and their son could have done, because they're finally free of her. She had to kill someone else. Mind you, he moved out and still paid for the place she lived while he moved down the road. It's ridiculous, the scenario. And this woman was not the most attractive thing in the world, but I can definitely see how she, you should see her interview. It's crazy. She's a nightmare, Karen. She's just delusional. Delusional. You know who else is delusional? Anyone who doesn't see the irony of reading the King James Bible when he was an absolute sodomite.
Explain to me. Explain to me!
I feel like that's not talked about enough, right? It's very obvious. Some call him bisexual. I don't think because you have sex with a woman to produce children because it's your duty makes you bisexual. If you do not sleep with any other women and are not interested in any other women, but are solely having romantic relationships with men. I love how that expression loves to be taken over anytime that a male king is, his sexuality is brought into question. Well, he must have just been bisexual, though. It's like, no, you can still be gay and married to a woman or have sex with a woman. I know a few friends who have done exactly that. And they will say, yeah, I was not bisexual. I was gay. I was attracted to men, only been attracted to men. But because of societal pressures, I felt the need to have a relationship or marry a woman. That does not necessarily make you bisexual. And speaking of sexuality, I learned a new terminology this week based on a story that was one of the most horrific stories I think I've heard in a while. But I never knew about genetic sexual attraction. It is described as a phenomenon of intense attraction between biological family members that can occur after close relatives are reunited after a long period of separation. Generally, in adopted situations, this affects families separated from birth or very early in the life of an adopted child. Which leads to the case of, I can't even remember all of the names involved. And I don't think I really want to, because the whole thing is fucked up. This guy gets together with this younger woman, or she's a teenager, and he's a mess. He's abusive. They end up having a child together. And after he tries to kill the child at one point, the mother gives the child up for adoption. She ends up staying in a relationship with this guy, but I also mentally fully understand it, and has three additional children with him. When this other girl, she is adopted, she has a loving family, she is a really straight A student, everything going for her in life. But then she decides she wants to reach out to her actual genetic parents. Well, she reaches out to her mother. And her mother, of course, wants to reunite with her daughter and have a relationship with her. However, the father ends up taking a very, very close interest in his daughter. And she ends up becoming attracted to her father. And yes, they end up having a sexual relationship. And he ends up getting rid of her mother and marries her. However, I believe the story ends with the fact that she gets pregnant.
What? What the fuck?
And he ends up killing her.
That's fucked up.
I will link the article below if you do want to read it. It's just a case of absolute and utter control, possessiveness, and something I never even thought adopted children might have fallen prey to. And so my mind was just blown by the story. And I'm sure, because I might the mother possibly allow, like she thought he would never cross that line, but I'm like, he tried to kill your daughter when she was a baby. But like I said, he got her when she was a baby, 15, when he preyed upon her. So, Lord, I felt so bad for the adoptive parents because they didn't want to isolate her. Because they know that if you're not patient and there for them, that'll just push them further into the arms of the other. I don't know, though. I keep thinking in my mind, what are the scenarios in which I may be forced to actually murder someone? And I feel like that would be one of those scenarios where I'm like, no, this is against nature. And if I have to kill you to ensure that my daughter is going to have a future, then I guess that's what I'm gonna have to do. She ain't gonna understand now. In 10 to 20 years, she will. That was my first thought. like how do you not take him out? And I know that it's not good to think and contemplate the scenarios in which you would murder someone, but when it comes to my child, the sky's kind of the limit on there if you cross certain lines. And I think that's one of those lines where there's no going back. And to cap off our true crime craziness, Paris Lee Bennett, born a psychopath, killed and abused his 4-year-old sister in revenge against his mother.
Oh no. Yikes. Yikes.
Unfortunately, he may get out of jail, and his mother had another child. And not only is she in danger, that child's in danger too. That's another crazy story that she did a whole interview on. You can find that on Dreading. Another very fascinating case of possibly what is not inherited, but there's always the case of nurture versus nature. And there's a lot of nature in that scenario. On a little lighter note, Charles Miller's will and his stipulations. This man died and wanted to award his fortune to the couple that gave the most births of children. And there were quite a few people that wanted the prize. And I think it was split three ways between. It was his actual fortune. Three families that all had 8 kids. And I'm like, is it worth it? And then I saw that price tag and I was like, fuck yeah, it is. If you were already going for a large family and you have a 2-partner system, but otherwise, I don't think it'd be worth it for me. What am I saying? I know it would not be worth it for me. Not at all. Some interesting science facts. Liquid oxygen is blue. Didn't know that. Unlike many other animals, humans are one of the few that cannot detect the Earth's magnetic field. Human skin does not have hydroreceptors, the type of cells needed to detect humidity. Male Komodo dragons have 2 penises, like most lizards.
Right you are, motherfucker!
Ducklings, unfortunately, have joined dolphins and cute animals that are absolute psychopaths, because not only do they practice cannibalism for boredom, but it turns out that the men's penises are that way because they like to rape the females, even mid-flight.
He's climbing in your windows, he's snatching your people up, trying to rape them, so y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, because they're raping everybody out here.
And I think we'll end with a little history. Learning about the Cafe Society. What is it? Who is associated? And how does and what does it have to do with Truman Capote? The Cafe Society was a New York City nightclub, opened from 1938 to 1948 in Greenwich Village. It was managed by Barney Josephine, who created the club to showcase African-American talent and to be an American version of the political cabarets he had seen in Europe, as well as running the first racially integrated nightclub in the United States. What the hell? Josephine also intended the club to defy the pretensions of the rich. He chose the name to mock Claire Booth Luce and what she referred to as Cafe Society, the habitats of more upscale nightclubs. The club prided itself on treating black and white customers equally, unlike many venues such as the Cotton Club, which featured black performers but barred black customers except for prominent black people in the entertainment industry. Josephine was of Jewish descent, so he, of course, understood the same racial oppression as blacks would have at that time in history. I mean, Bynes clearly would read, no Jews, no Negroes, sometimes just no dogs, because that's how very low class both races were considered. But he did make a very concerted effort to fight back against that with his club, which attracted a lot of political figures. Unfortunately, trying to integrate into society, especially when you have the communist scare going around and you have all these charity events at this one place where things can get political, you're going to get the ire of the government. Josephine's club was the scene of numerous, as I stated, political events and fundraisers, and they were often left-wing causes, both during and after World War II. So in 1947, his brother, Leon, was subpoenaed by the House Committee on Un-American Activities.
That's gotta be racist.
Which led to hostile comments from columnists Westbrook Pegler and Walter Winchell. Business dropped sharply as a result, and the club closed the following year. So yeah, thanks. What the fuck is that ugly man's face name is? You know I'm looking at J. Edgar Hoover. But what does this have to do with Truman Capote? Well, this is where he often met with his swans, you know, the women he betrayed in the book that he wrote because he secretly hated these women and just got close to them to know all their secrets so that he could sabotage them in the most brutal of way. I came in like a wrecking ball. He was dropped from society for it, but man, did he not only classify them and perk them up in a position where they thought they were swans. He made it very clear in the end that they were ugly ducklings. That dude took Petty to a whole nother level. A whole nother level. He waited years to drop that bombshell. Had no friends. He had a couple of friends afterwards, but definitely decided that it was worth it. Even though in the end he was still crying like a little bitch, like he didn't know what he did. Which that was the only part that took away from it. Like if you would have stood in your ire, and your pettiness, I would have had a little bit more respect for you than you running around acting like the victim. You know what you did. And that is the last of my ramblings for this week. If you have a topic you'd like to talk about, blackandcouch@gmail.com. You can leave a comment below. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. Until the next time, peace, hair grease, and blacker magic.